When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Everybody, welcome to the show, the VPZD show, episode 16.
VP, in person welcome. This time.
We're doing it in person.
Might be the second or third time it's been in person.
That's right, because yeah. We don't believe that COVID is going to stop us from being us. We're like Laverne and Shirley. That's how old I am.
Yeah, we didn't believe it a while back, but now I think many people don't believe it.
You know what's funny? Okay, this not believing it a while back stuff. So you and I have been saying this thing, like, hey, this thing is with us forever. We've got deer with COVID. Right. Unless you want to murder all the deer, you're never going to have zero COVID.
Well, don't tell that to China because they might do it. They're already going after pets and such. We'll talk about that. We'll have to talk about Shanghai.
Shanghai. Yeah. They're doing really great, I understand.
Yes.
But this idea that, hey, we've been saying this, and then someone like Lena Wen says it, and Stat News runs an article saying, controversial comments from Lena Wen. I'm like, we've been saying this shit from the beginning.
Yeah, I mean, it's been obvious, I think, since even 2020. We, I think, were embracing of sort of a balanced perspective until vaccination. But after vaccination, I think we were sort of on the page of, you know, when are you going to get back to life? And what are we going to, you know, what are we waiting for? And now she's come along, I think, in 2022. That was when she, you know, switched sides, so to speak. And, you know, getting a lot of heat for it, I guess, because she's out there on CNN. You know, but she is taking fire because she's on that channel that is a COVIDian channel.
Oh, yeah.
And she is putting this message out there. And so I see her on the internet. She's taking a lot of heat.
I'll give her props for taking the heat that we've been taking for infinite years.
I was like, oh, it feels nice and cool now.
Yes, it does.
Nice and cool.
She's like a heat pump. Sucked some of that heat and
sucks the
evacuated
anger.
It into CNN for us.
But you know what? One thing some doctor told me, he messaged me and said, you know, look at the response she's getting. It's not about what she's saying, because what she's saying is actually quite sensible, which is that, you know, you've been vaccinated, you've been boosted. We all have to get back with life. And this virus is not going to go anywhere, which is what we've been saying for about a year.
Yep.
She's saying something very sensible. And if you look at the response, even from other doctors, people aren't saying, oh, actually, the virus can be eradicated, or actually, I disagree with you. We should just wait for that fifth booster or sixth booster. They're not saying sort of what their position is. They're just making memes about her.
Yeah.
You know, they're targeting her. They're just sort of general nasty comments about her, you know, and, you know, we've gotten a little bit of that. So have a lot of people. But it just shows you that, you know, even very well-educated people cannot engage on the merits of the argument. They make it about her.
Yeah. And especially educated people, I feel like they almost weaponize their own petty insecurities and weird personality quirks in a setting. I mean, look. We both went to medical school. What percentage of your classmates were clinically insane? I mean, like, and I put myself in this category. Uh-huh. I mean, these are not normal people.
I mean, to some degree, I think you make a great point, which is that, you know, the thing you're selecting for is somebody who at a very young age decided they're going to put their nose to the grindstone and give up a lot of, you know, sort of normal things you do when you're young in order to pursue this craft. And so by definition, you're going to get some people who are a little bit wacky.
A little wacky.
But they are acting like high school bullies or middle school. Actually, not even high school.
No, middle school.
Middle
yeah.
school, yeah.
By high school, you figured, okay, I have this fake identity and I'm going to roll with it. Middle school, you're still trying to figure it out. So the bullying and the weirdness and all that other stuff just
comes out.
It comes out.
Maybe social media disinhibits them and makes them, regresses them.
I think social media is a big piece of it because it does hijack right into our limbic system. It plugs right into the matrix right there.
Right in there.
And it just rewards all this shitty behavior.
Yeah, it does.
You know, and Twitter's really good at that. What do you think of Elon Musk trying to
buy Twitter.
Yeah.
Buy Twitter. I see that's also divided Twitter.
Of course.
Should he buy Twitter? Well, you know, I guess I think that, you know, I mean, I don't know everything about what he actually intends on doing, but my general understanding of it, and tell me if I'm wrong, is that he's one of these guys that came out of the original internet, where they thought the internet would be really sort of unregulated and free and let people sort of say whatever the hell they want to say and maybe even be whoever they want to be. Then came along sort of internet 2.0 after the dot-com bust, and internet 2.0 was about how can we make a lot of money from this thing? And making money means collecting information and selling ads and targeting things. And making money means that somebody will see you're making tons of money and they may not like the fact that you're allowing sort of all this kind of free-for-all on your platform, and they're going to ask you to regulate it. And so I think right now internet companies are trying to be both like a neutral content, a neutral platform, but also a content regulator. But I think that unfortunately the political left has become a big fan of content regulation, maybe because we happen to be on the political left aligned with the people who run the companies. Because I think if the people who ran the companies were on the right, we wouldn't be so happy about content regulation.
Right.
And Elon comes along and he sees the content regulation on Twitter. He doesn't like it because he's old school. He wants to buy it and sort of make it what he thinks it should be. I think he's clever in one respect, which is that if he made his own platform, it would fail. There is a sort of founder effect. They already have the population of people, so you got to take what's there and make it better. But I think a lot of people, particularly on the political left, don't like the idea that we won't have content regulation.
Yeah, I think you're right. And Elon is like a bugaboo on the left now. Like,
he's
somebody that they just don't like. And it's quite fascinating because he, you know, he's going to – just even the threat of this is enough to like – people are like, wait, what? Like,
and what did he do that earned the ire? What did he do that people on the left don't like?
I think he's just honest and says what he thinks, which is never a good thing in today's day and age. You just can't do that.
You know, when I was talking to somebody, and this person's like not a fan of these tech billionaires, and arguably I'm not a fan.
I'm not either.
We're not either, yeah. But we were talking about Elon, and this person was, you know, saying something critical. And I said, but you got to give him one thing, which is this is a guy who actually built some real things.
That's why I often will give Elon a pass, whereas someone like a Zuckerberg or something like that, it's like, well, he built something that like is kind of vaporware.
Yeah.
But Elon builds things that move on the road, that do stuff, that bring a lot of, you know, tangible benefits to people.
We've both made websites, you know.
Dude. Exactly.
And my website, arguably, it's less entertaining than Facebook, but it's also less, it's better for you
because
it's not trying to hijack your attention. But Elon made a real thing.
He made a real thing, a few real things, right? Real now, thing. The sending people into space thing, I'm not sure that's as beneficial in the short run.
But I guess, I don't know, it's...
The technology that is involved
maybe
is...
Maybe it's kind of cool he wants to get that rocket to land. You know, I agree with you. I'm not sure. Going into space isn't on my bucket list.
Right.
You know, I got other places I want to visit.
Exactly.
Before I go out into the nothingness of the void of space.
Like the nothingness of inner space.
Well, I'd rather go on a meditation retreat than just outer space.
Outer space, right.
But, you know, I give him credit. At least that's like a real thing in this world. You can't bullshit your way to space. You know, you have to be, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's an engineering problem. You can't bullshit your way to a car, but you can bullshit your way to a website.
Oh, that's a great way to look at it. I mean, in many ways, all this stuff is kind of bullshitware, right? Except for the tangible stuff. That's why Elon is a little different. And you listen to Elon on Rogan, which we can talk about, you know, even Bill Maher on Rogan recently.
Yes, we'll talk about it, yeah.
But Elon on Rogan was a revelation for me, because here you see a guy who like he starts to open up, and I'm like feeling into this guy. He is anxious. He's neurotic. Mm. He's like every one of our med school classmates, but he's out there doing crazy multi-billion-dollar inventing, you know, pushing the envelope of shit.
Yeah.
And yeah, he's going to come with baggage. If you think that doesn't come with baggage, like,
but what about the current Twitter infrastructure? You think that has no baggage? It's got a lot of baggage.
Dude.
You've got the founder who stepped out. You've got this new person appointed. This new person is, by all accounts, happy to like stifle things that he doesn't believe are appropriate. Mm. And you just have these tech companies, like they're less than a year from when they said you couldn't talk about lab leak. I mean,
yeah.
What a colossal screw up. And now they want to talk about content moderation? You just screwed that up.
Yeah, they can't be trusted to do that. I mean, you know, they're practically nation state actors now in terms of the size and the influence
that they have. Influence.
Wealth. You know, the Chinese do it with an autocracy. These guys do it with this, you know, because they control conversations. If you're shadow banned on one of these platforms, you know, you're effectively dead.
Yeah.
The algorithm pretty much determines your reach and influence. And so Mara on Rogan.
Yeah.
I didn't see it.
Oh, I listened to it. on the Spotify app, which, by the way, is the worst app.
Oh, it's the worst app.
It's the worst app. Stopped like five times and I downloaded the episode. Why is it stopping?
I don't know why we're on Spotify, but it's like I don't listen to us on Spotify.
We're not exclusively on Spotify.
That's true. We're all over.
Although, listen, Spotify, for $100 million, we'll be happy to come on. I don't know about you, but I'd be sold for 10.
Okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
100 million.
There's a company you don't even know who's running it. It's like,
I don't even
who
know.
The hell runs Spotify?
That's maybe that's why they couldn't boycott Rogan, because you don't even know who to send a complaint letter.
Right. Bobby Spotify, the CEO of the Spotify dynasty. Like,
I listened to this episode. It was really, I mean, they talked about so many things, but he had a little segment about medicine, which I thought was very, a really good point for a layperson. And Bill is, you know, he's not a doctor. And the point he was making was that, you know, does he believe things that you and I don't believe about what to eat and how to live, sort of woo-hoo, holistic kind of stuff, like all Hollywood people?
You mean Mara or Rogan?
Mara,
yeah.
Well, and Rogan, of
right,
course. I mean, he's in the supplement business.
Right, right.
They had a nice exchange about, well, you know, how do you look like that at 50? And he's like, I'm taking testosterone.
Oh, you know? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, Mar also has his own health beliefs that I think, you know, you and I wouldn't agree with
right.
Because we study sort of medical science. But one thing he said that I think is really good is he said that, you know, when doctors tell you that they know what's best for you, they have to also acknowledge that they just don't know a lot. And that biomedicine is in its infancy, and that the body to some degree is like the bottom of the ocean. You just haven't explored it all. And I actually think it's profoundly correct.
Yes.
You know, we look at the successes of medicine, antibiotics, stenting for STEMI, and we think, oh, they know it all. But, you know, we have made very modest changes in cancer, even though we've had some great drugs. There's still, you know, so many people who die untimely of cancer. Mm. There's so many things that we just have barely scratched the surface in even understanding how it works in sickness or in health. And so I think, like, Bill's point is that if you don't know a lot, you should come with some humility to say, yes, I think, you know, this intervention it might be a net benefit to you. I believe that to be true. Here's the evidence. I do reserve the fact that there are some things I don't know, and I don't know about some sort of sequela. For instance, you know, when we had that adenoviral vector vaccine, we didn't know that it'd have VIT, that vaccine-induced thrombosis and thrombocytopenia. That was something that surprised people. But the way they were talking about it when it debuted, they didn't say that it could be VIT. You know, they didn't know.
Right.
You know, so there are things we don't know. And I think he was refreshing to point that out.
You know, it's not something that we teach on the wards, actually, humility.
Yeah, humility.
In fact, we teach the opposite on the wards. It's kind of like, oh, we know we can control all the parameters of this hospitalized patient's course. It just test this, do this, turn this dial, turn that. And actually, that was the kind of culture of medicine is, no, you are in control. What you need to go in is go, hey, guess what? There's a thing called tincture of time.
Mm-hmm.
There's a thing called just watch and see mm-hmm. what happens. Understanding the humility and the fact that we really don't know a lot. Like, some of the miracles of medicine are very simple things, like epinephrine for anaphylactic shock.
Mm.
Like, that'll save your life. Mm. Like, we don't talk about that enough. Like, that'll save your life. And it's a very, it's not a complex, actually, it is complex.
Right, right, right.
But the intervention is quite simple.
Quite simple, yeah.
Epinephrine, clamp things down, save your life, right? But the things that are much more complex, cancer, heart disease even, like hypertension, diabetes, these chronic diseases, obesity, we don't understand. There are so many dials and so much unknown and so much mind-body interface and so much mind-environment interface and the biopsychosocial aspect.
So that's something he talks about too, which is that, you know, we in Western medicine, and, you know, I'm as guilty of this as anyone else, you know, we don't put a lot of stock in like your state of thinking and your mental awareness on your physical health. But he said, you know, you must acknowledge that you just don't know everything there. And I was like, I guess to be fair, you know, we don't know what we don't know.
Right.
We think of the body as a very physical thing and that your emotional states are likely secondary to it. But I will also say, on a caveat, I also see sometimes these things where it's like, you know, like among people with cancer, those with more positive thoughts live longer than those without.
Jesus.
And I'm like, well, one of the confounding variables is if you have a lot of cancer in your body and it's secreting a ton of, you know, cytokines that might make you feel depressed and lethargic, and it might be the cancer that drives the mood and not the mood that drives the cancer, you know? So,
and going with that, actually, because of this, that correlation, causation, confounding, going with that is this kind of victim shaming that happens in cancer. Oh, if your attitude wasn't positive, you never would have, you know, you wouldn't have lost the battle. You wouldn't have lost the battle with cancer.
Come
and maybe
on.
Because your mood is so bad, it's really harming your healing. And, you know, people really don't like that. You know, like my friend Rachel Zofnis talks about chronic pain a lot. And so there is this saying, even in Buddhist Zen circles, that pain is inevitable, but suffering is optional, that it's your mindset state. But her counter to that, which I think is interesting, is that, well, so now you're stigmatizing people who are suffering because it's now on them to control the suffering. The truth is some of these things really are very complicated, and you do need to acknowledge that it is that way.
Yeah, it's a humility thing. You know, and like many people, I also, you know, I bristle at that battle metaphor, and I don't like it. I don't think it's very helpful. But there are some people who actually find it helpful, you know?
Right.
And so who am I to say to those people that, you know, like it's not helpful to, well, if it's helpful to you, then you do it, but it, we shouldn't impose that on someone who doesn't find it helpful.
Yeah.
Similarly, I'm always intrigued by, you know, as people have advanced cancer, they often feel the desire to eat less. And we do so, so much to try to get them to eat more, including drug development that's pushing, you know, so many putative compounds to increase appetite, et cetera. And sometimes I wonder if, like, I don't know, are we doing somebody, are we actually like benefiting them? And like, we have observational studies that show that like, yes, people who lose more weight are more likely to die in the short term. Yes. But that's different than the claim of if you take someone who's losing weight and you spoon feed them or really sort of, you know, harp on them to eat more, do you actually extend their life and do you improve their quality of life? Or, you know, nobody likes somebody telling you what to eat, you know, or to eat more, eat more.
Oh, this is key, man, because you see this in, not just in cancer, but in patients with dementia or elderly patients who just are starting to lose weight and so on. And that weight loss may well be an epiphenomenon of an inevitable decline in other things. But the sense of control on the family's part in particular is that, oh, if I just, okay, you got to eat. What is wrong with you?
It's like
you
an Indian grandmother when you're a kid.
Oh, totally.
Always trying to get you to eat more.
If you're not, eat the gulab jamun. Have a sweet. You know, anything.
And I was like, I don't have enough metformin to eat that gulab jamun.
Exactly. Come on,
dude.
Insulin is so expensive right now. Yeah, but it really is. There's this kind of idea that we, again, gets back to humility, this sense of control. Really, like, you know, the deepest, and again, I hate to sidetrack it on this, but the deepest spiritual teachings are always that you have no control. Mm-hmm. Like, actually accepting this present moment as it is gives you a weird paradoxical control because you allow life to show you what's actually supposed to happen. And in medicine, you can do medicine. You can practice amazing medicine and still have that philosophy that like, wow, no, actually this system that's so complex and interacts with everything around it actually is to be respected. And what we do is we are kind of part of the inevitable unfolding of that. But the humility required to do that.
You know, where it would have been useful, I think, like two things. One, the Human Genome Project. Francis Collins himself wrote a paper that said by 2015, you'll go to the doctor and they'll sequence you and they'll tell you which blood pressure medicine is right for you.
Uh-huh.
Well, 2015 came and went and we didn't do that.
Yep.
Because, of course, the genome wasn't giving us all the information we thought it might. And the more I think about it now, I feel like the genome is like, you know, in the Plato's allegory of the cave, the prisoners are chained to the cave and there's a fire behind them and they only see their own shadows. And Plato asks, what would your perception of the world be if you've only seen your shadow and then one day somebody comes and unshackles you and you're allowed to leave the cave? Similarly, sometimes in biology, I think we're only seeing the shadow, like the sequence of nucleotides when it's in reality a complex three-dimensional thing. And it doesn't stop us from thinking we know everything.
Dude, that Plato allegory is like the central heart of a lot of like spiritual traditions too, is that this world is an illusion to some degree. But what I'd say is this, what you may be pointing at is something that, say, Donald Hoffman, who I've had on my show, talks about. What if reality, we just have some amateur error in understanding reality, that we think there's physical stuff that then spins up consciousness and all of that. But what if it was actually consciousness is primary and it spins up icons that within consciousness look like a physical world? So our science, our medicine, and all of this is, it's like Plato's allegory of the cave. You're moving icons on a desktop, but you're not seeing the zeros and ones underneath. And so we can get very far with that. Like, we've gone incredibly far. We have iPhones and all this crazy technology, but there's going to come a limit. And I think in humans, in the body, that limit is reached faster because this is this oscillating kind of waveform of, you know, quantum mechanics interfacing with consciousness, interfacing with whatever matter is. And we're like, oh, but you can just, there's a receptor and a binding protein and a DNA, you know, code for it. Doesn't work that way. You're just seeing shadows.
Not always. And then the other example I think about is the idea that like all these people are like, oh, it's just more testing. Like if only we had more testing or if only we had a little bit more antivirals. And I was like, well, you know, it will be, I mean, the antivirals might make a marginal difference. More testing, you know, I'm not sure what you're going to accomplish, you know, anymore when it's just widespread community transmission.
Where
do you want to go? The testing? I want to go to Shanghai.
Yeah, go to Shanghai because now we're in this like Omicron BA whatever we're in.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And Shanghai is a great example of zero COVID gone gone mad.
Or gone to its logical conclusion.
Yes.
This is what these people wanted, Z.
Yes.
They wanted this. They wouldn't come out and say it. They said, oh, we just need to lock down hard. And the problem in America was, you know, those bad people just didn't do what they're supposed to. They didn't wear their mask and they came out and went on unnecessary
Thanksgiving visits.
Yeah. And their unessential
travel.
Unessential travel and unessential social gatherings. Well, China's put an end to all that. 27 million people locked in their houses. Then they realize that, oh, when you lock down, you might not get enough food on the table. People going hungry.
No medicines. No insulin, no food.
When you're sick with a non-COVID, they won't even take you in the hospital, I hear. Yeah. I'm reading reports. They have announced that they are changing their policy of the child separation you read about. But I've also read anecdotal accounts that they haven't, even though they said they would. The policy is if you got a two-year-old kid, the kid tests positive, you test negative, the kid is being ripped out of your house,
taken away
to central detention agency.
This is insane.
Insane. It's like something out of an Orwell novel.
Actually, let's think about this. Yeah. It's insane from our perspective.
Correct.
From their perspective of whatever their collectivist perspective is, okay, maybe this all makes sense. I don't know because I'm not in that perspective. But either way, from a standpoint of objectivity, as much as we can muster, that seems unproductive to me.
You know, I do think though, let's imagine that the reason it feels so bad to us is it just fundamentally clashes with our moral intuition that no matter how bad it gets, you can't do that. You can't separate people from their babies. And when you see them crying in the streets and you know, I heard a grandmother was threatening to commit suicide if they take the child away. You know, all these things that natural in any time in human history through war or famine, if anyone tried to do that to someone's kids, I'm sure they would feel that way.
Yeah.
And it clashes with our moral intuition. But from the moral intuition that the good and just thing to do is to minimize COVID-19 spread so fewer people die and hurt from COVID, the zero COVID philosophy, they may argue it is the moral thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you had the child at home with you, you could get sick and you could spread it to someone else and it would prolong the pandemic. You know, remember how they kept saying that, you know, this all those bad actors prolong the pandemic.
Right, right.
Ignoring the fact that we will all eventually get the virus.
Yes.
So what does it mean to prolong the pandemic? Once you're vaccinated, we're all going to get the virus. That's the best you can do.
And I believe Lena Wen said that.
Yeah, recently.
Yeah, recently. Only recently, right?
VPZD 2021, Lena Wen 2022. We're the same person.
In fact, I think I said it in the summer of 2020.
You think you were
What I said was, listen, I think it's not a bad idea to kind of bend the curve until we get to a vaccine. But just so you know, everybody's going to get this eventually.
You know, we should do a video where we take all our old videos, you know, and do the react to ourselves.
Yeah. That's a great video. And you know what? You'll do much better than I'll do. I think you'll.
Well, we should also pick some of the people on CNN and stuff and really get a good
compare
laugh
and
out
contrast.
Of it. Oh, yeah.
They're gotta be a hoot.
Even Fauci. He'll get decimated.
Yeah, that's true.
I think he won't do well.
That, you know what? That's a viral video waiting to happen. And it's so much work that we won't do it.
I know. I don't
Yeah, because we're just, I don't know. You're busy and I'm lazy.
I mean, we'd have to get the videos, watch them, which would take tens of hours. God,
watching ourselves is so much fun.
So, to be avoided.
Oh, to our detractors, they think that's like a paradise for us, sitting and watching ourselves.
I think a lot of people, I don't really like to watch myself. It's awkward.
Yeah, I don't like it.
Yeah.
We were just talking about actually, this is a side note, but both of us have changed our style of speaking on video because we've gotten more comfortable with being ourselves. Mm-hmm. So early videos of both of us, like from years ago for me and, you know, a year or two ago from you.
You've gotten more polish under your belt.
I'm
still a rough gem.
You're more of a natural than
more
I am.
Of a natural.
In
finish,
the old days, I was almost playing. I often played to the camera and was more of a character and so on. Like I'm talking years ago, and then now I'm just because I think I'm in my own space and the isolation of the pandemic too, and not having a team here. It's just
I feel the same way. I listened to my first podcast. It's god awful. Like I should put off the internet.
Some of my earlier stuff is so embarrassing, and I even had a little a couple hairs, and I was like, "What the hell is this guy?" You know, I don't like me now, but that guy, holy.
It's amazing. You know, it's also like if you ever go back and read emails you wrote 10 years ago, you're who is this loquacious
bastard?
Who is this person talking too much?
Dude, I used to write so much and eloquently, but it said nothing. It was all doublespeak. And now my emails are like an emoji.
I'm so short. Somebody's like, oh, it's rude to write such short emails. I was like, but it answered the relevant question.
Yeah.
And I didn't have any more time for that email.
Exactly.
Yeah. Let's talk about, so the point on Shanghai, of course. Shanghai, I think the people who supported stronger restrictions, they are getting what they didn't know they wanted. with Shanghai. And I think what it shows is that we could never have done that.
Yeah.
Because it's a human rights violation.
It is. It's as simple as that. From an American's perspective, probably from an objective perspective, yeah, but
it's a human rights violation.
It, you know, and it's not going to accomplish, I mean, what they're we'll gonna, see in the end.
They yeah. will lose. I mean, they'll eventually yeah. get completely yeah. swept with the virus.
Right.
And if they don't, I mean, the real question I have is what the hell have they been doing the last yeah. year and a half? Vaccinate your population.
But are they using Sinovac? I mean, that's kind of
their crappy
that's
vaccine?
Kind of like a wacky, yeah. I mean, you know, I gotta give this to Borla and the gang.
Yeah,
you know, the mRNA vaccines are pretty high quality.
You titrate
vaccines.
That as much as the heart can take.
Titrate it to inflammation.
Titrate
that's what
it
you
to
want
the
to
tropsin.
Do.
You're good.
Yeah, as soon as you start leaking troponin,
yeah, that's when you back.
Hit it. You know why? That's what we ought to do. Instead of this, like, well, how many boosters is good enough?
No.
Just like, well, no, wait. When you start leaking troponin, when your troponin becomes super therapeutic,
then you're at the sweet
then
spot.
Then you're at the yeah. sweet spot.
It's all reversible anyway. It's all that.
Yeah,
say.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. This is reversible with like 5 days of hospitalization. Yeah. And
but
yeah.
I mean, it's ineffective. I mean, Pfizer, Moderna, the first dose. You know, I'm pretty sold on the first dose for most adults.
Yeah.
And beyond that, we got the questions. But yeah, I don't know what they're doing in China. You know, the other thing I wanted to say about China was the Western world learned about lockdown from China.
Right.
And it just goes to show you, next time public health people, like, don't take cues from totalitarian regime.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, we learned how to do war from Putin.
Oh,
you just
yeah,
go
right.
in and murder a bunch of civilians and bury the bodies in mass graves and then, yeah.
Yeah, don't learn from bad actors.
Right. That's probably a good, you
probably
know,
good.
That's a good good rule of thumb for Twitter.
Yeah.
Like why should the press be taking screenshots of dipshits twatting on Twitter?
I mean, I guess like a huge chunk of journalism now is just to talk about what people are saying on the right. social media platform.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah, it's nuts. Yeah, it's interesting. I've actually enjoyed reading some of the Ukraine press just because it's different. Like, they're not quoting anyone. Oh, they actually do. Well, a Russian foreign minister, blah, 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 said on Telegram today that all Ukrainians should die.
They take and also, since it's clear that, like, our allegiances are with the Ukraine side, which is, I mean, sensible.
Sensible.
But it doesn't mean that we have to accept everything the Ukrainian government says.
That's right.
Like, because they also need to put out war propaganda, too.
Right, right.
And so I sometimes see our journalists parroting it.
Yeah, it's funny. My mom was actually kind of pissed because the Ukrainians were – I think there were a lot of Indians in Ukraine that were studying medicine at the time of the invasion, and they were treated really badly by the Ukrainians, according to my mother. And so she took umbrage at that, but then later said, I'm sorry for even taking umbrage at that, seeing how they're being treated by the Russians is just like appalling. So it's kind of like this weird moral conflict. So speaking of which, actually, this might be a good segue into a video I did recently about kids, and it was based on an Atlantic article.
Anxiety.
Yeah, and so kids' mental health has deteriorated if you believe the statistics on it.
If you only believe your eyes and ears and all the data, yeah, I'll concede
and
to you. Yeah.
Any pediatrician, any psychologist, and any parent can tell you. So, you know, my own daughters tell me all their friends are in guidance counselor's office all the time with anxiety, depression. I have relatives that aren't that old that are young, the late teens that are on, you know, antidepressants and that kind of thing. And I remember, look, you know, we had – you and I are frame shifted by about 10 years, but we pretty much had very similar upbringings,
similar
right?
Similar sort of.
Rural, you kind of did your thing. Parenting was kind of a little hands off. And so the question is, first of all, you have to believe that this is really
let's
a problem.
Let's concede that to be the case.
Yeah, okay. Let's concede it. Now, and you could say, well, the argument is, no, we've just destigmatized it so more people talk about it. No, but
I do think that people have looked at that question and it's beyond what even destigmatized.
That's right. Right. Because you're seeing actual suicide attempts. You're seeing actual self-harm, cutting, and things like that. It's worse in girls. But guys still suffer from it and so on. It started in about 2009. They started measuring this upstick, which correlates to the development of this and the fact that now people can plug right in.
Total coincidence.
So there are four things postulated in the article.
Yeah.
The first is social media, right? Mm-hmm. Well, so we know we've talked about social media as a harmful thing, especially for young girls. They commit relational aggression. They have FOMO. They stop socializing in person, which has been associated with better outcomes.
And I think the reason like so many people find it palatable is that like I think most of us when we finish looking at social media, we are more annoyed than we were when we started.
Totally. I'll be totally transparent. Like you and I, when we just met today, how are you doing, Z? I don't know, man. Yeah. I'm just kind of like, whatever. The truth is, anytime I get sucked into social media, I get less happy.
And anytime I am so busy that I don't even have time to look, I get more happy.
You get more happy. Me too. So whether I go on a retreat or whether I just forget about it or whatever, I'm better. I'm better. Like the other day, I decided I'm doing nothing today except for dropping the kids off and I'm going to meditate. And I meditated for almost 6 hours. By the end of the day, reality started getting transparent. Like it was just this empty awakeness with like vibrating energy. And I'm like, oh, this isn't so bad. The next morning I opened some social media. I decided I was going to make a video. I did this and reality clunks itself back on in a way that's very dysphoric. It's very uncomfortable. You don't have to be that crazy to experience it. But so social media,
okay,
yeah.
Social media is one possible.
Yeah. Possible thing. Two is the media. So this idea, and we were talking about this, like kids are obsessed. They have so much access to news now. News has a negativity bias that all they see is the world, the sky is falling. Climate change, political division, Ukraine, nuclear war, environmental destruction, all this stuff. And they take it very seriously because they don't have fully formed frontal lobes yet to understand it. I got my own problems. I can't change the world.
So when you were growing up, did I even watch the news that much?
I know. Barely.
We'd sometimes put Tom Brokaw on in the evening, like right around dinner time. And, but as even a high schooler, even a college kid, I have to admit,
I
kept up a little bit, but I wasn't all up to speed.
These kids are jacked into it now because it's in their feed. And okay, so this is where, so social media and media interact. Because they get their news through social media. So there was a study they did, and I didn't look at the primary data, so it might be bullshit, but they took people off Facebook for 4 weeks and found a couple things. One is their knowledge of world events had plummeted. So they actually knew less about the world.
Okay.
Their subjective sense of well-being had skyrocketed. So there's this inverse curve.
They paid him to stay off or something like
something
that.
Something like that, yeah.
Vaguely recall.
Yeah.
Okay, so one, social media. Two, the media. And of course, the media, if it bleeds, it leads. You know, of course, it's like they go into those kind of dark places because that's what drives attention, economy.
Yep, that's exactly right.
What are the other two?
Yeah, so the other two were parenting style.
Okay.
So this accommodative parenting style where we helicopter our kids if they're, oh, little Timmy is afraid of dogs. Keep him away from any dogs. Don't let a dog near him instead of exposure therapy was here's a puppy
or,
to me.
Or this peanut allergy thing.
Where same thing. Okay. Peanut allergies or bad words that frighten you or
bad
like words. You use the wrong, in other words, you use the wrong pronoun and now that's a piece of violence.
I thought it was swear words.
No.
If you don't want to hear swear words, don't come around me when I'm assembling furniture. Because there's going to be some swear words, you know. These hands are useless. You know, I didn't become a surgeon for a reason, you know.
Me too. Yeah. My hands are truly, they're like dead appendages. They're like two appendices. Like, you know, like you could just remove them and nothing.
Sometimes when I go to scroll, I get a little twitch in my finger, you know, I can't even do that.
you're so physically incompetent with the fingers that even scrolling the feed,
I feel like I can't quite do it. Sometimes you can't click on I swear to God, maybe it's just me, but sometimes they make those buttons on the app so small and I feel like I can just never hit the right spot on the screen.
Yeah.
Always a little off.
I'm with you, dude.
You know, that's a great way to make somebody feel like they're going crazy. Make a program that just wherever they tap, it always just thinks it's like slightly off.
That's the fourth reason that kids are crazy. That's really interesting, actually. That would drive people insane.
So the third reason was parenting styles. And this has been discussed, I think, in Jonathan Haidt's book,
Calling an American Mind. Yeah. So that was referenced even in the article. And okay. I think it's absolutely must read if you're into that, into trying to figure this out. And there was another one, and I've already forgotten what the third was. But
well, that's probably why you're not so anxious.
Yeah.
And I was also listening to a podcast, and on this podcast, this young should I say what it was? It's another Bill Maher podcast.
Oh, yeah.
Now I'm going to look like a big fan, but well, I do like him. But, you know, I do think he's a clever person. I think he's somebody who just like didn't go to a lot. I mean, didn't he finish college and then he started working in comedy? But like a lot of comedians, you know, some of them are very smart and they're very astute about, you know, social world and what makes people tick. And he was talking to some young person. This young person had a lot of anxiety about, you know, climate change and things like that. And he was really, I could kind of feel in his voice that he's like trying to counsel them, like, you know, that's not on you.
Yeah.
Like, yes, we all can make sort of environmental choices or not. But in the grand scheme of things, that moves the needle like this. Governments have to make big choices if we're going to make some dent in this. But moreover, like you shouldn't feel – I mean you may feel like it's a cause worth pursuing, just like I feel like high cancer drug prices are a cause worth pursuing. And we do have this whole research agenda on it. But I don't – you know, and I'm sympathetic to people who are paying high out of pocket. I feel bad for them. I get angry about it. But I don't let that anxiety come back and paralyze me. And I'm certainly not waking up, you know – anxious about this social political issue. I'm trying to think about how to fix the problem.
That's right. And this is a part of the distortion of control.
Yeah.
Like that my individual choices right now are going to have this massive impact on the world, and it gives you a sense of responsibility. It really, it's much more nuanced than that. And that actually reminded me of the third thing,
okay,
or the fourth thing,
yeah,
which is the isolation that we've put kids under, whether it's pandemic or otherwise. And so they say, oh, they're having alone time, but it's alone with phone. So they're not sleeping. They're spending more time with this and less time in person. So they drink less, they DUI less, all these things that we would have thought, oh, this is less teen pregnancy. All those things are better, and yet their mental health is suffering. Why? Because they're sacrificing the in-person interaction for a fake interaction.
Mm-hmm.
And so this sense of loneliness or isolation, what did we do in the pandemic? We made it 20-fold worse by closing schools. So you close schools and you put them behind a mask when they are in school, and you don't think that's going to have a consequence for developing young people who thrive on social. I mean, the whole idea is during their teens, they get away from their parents and the peer group starts to matter, right?
Yeah.
But this has been taken away. Everything's been shifted later.
Yeah, I know. I totally agree with you. And that's a really astute point. I guess I didn't tell you about this before we started, but there's a new study out of Finland, and they have a really wonderful—
Oh, you mean a future NATO partner of ours?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they're not, yeah.
That's what I hear.
Yeah.
I guess, of course, I'd be nervous too.
I would. Sharing a border practically with Russia. Yeah.
But they've been invaded before and they pushed, they resisted.
Yes. During World War II, I think when the Germans started fighting the Russians had to give up on the war there.
The war in Finland.
Yeah.
So what I read about Finland was Helsinki and Turku, which is apparently, and I hope I pronounced that correctly.
It's beautiful.
I'm sure some Finn will say that.
Finns are, they can get pissy, dude.
I've been to Helsinki and
yeah,
had a lovely time. Helsinki Hematology Day, I think 2018. Thanks all for the visit, but it was actually a lovely time. But and I took a dip in the Baltic Sea.
Oh, nice!
And then I went in the sauna, and I could barely take that frigid water. But
man,
some of these older people were swimming laps. I
oh,
swear
they,
to
yeah,
God.
they're hardy.
Oh man,
yeah.
I go, well, anyway. watch my. That's what I was about to say. So this is a study: Helsinki versus Turku. In Helsinki, if you're under 12, you're not masking because they follow the WHO to the letter, which is the selective under 12, and they say there's no reason to do it. So under 12, no masks. Good for Helsinki. Wow, that would be anathema in this U.S. And 10 to 12 in Turku, they went a little bit more aggressive, and they masked 10 to 12. And they show like a comparison of COVID-19 rates in these two cities. And it has some advantages because culturally, Finland is, you know—
pretty homogenous.
Yeah, more comparable than comparing, let's say, for instance, Rando City in Texas to the Bay Area, where
right,
it's culturally very different. I don't think masks became as political. You know, they didn't have the Finnish version of Donald J. Trump not wear one, and the anti, you know, DJTs wear them with vigor and, you know, all this stuff. So they don't have all that kind of baggage. And in this study, it shows clearly the cases— they were like identical. They rose, they fell, you know, it was all over. But there was like no difference between these two cities in this age group in 10 to 12, even though one had to do it, one didn't.
Mm.
And we also have the Spanish data. That's a similar kind of thing. It takes advantage of a natural experiment that 5-year-olds didn't and 6-year-olds did. And there was no regression discontinuity or step in that. So I think the answer is that I really think it probably doesn't do much to have a cloth mask mandate in kids.
Yeah.
It probably doesn't. Well, it certainly doesn't do much, a cloth mask mandate in adults. And most of these, and to this date in this country, everyone talks about like mask mandates. It's a cloth mask mandate. Even to this day on TSA flight, they're not making you wear a good mask.
Right.
That's one. Two, we've had vaccines for over a year. If you want to get one, you want to get one.
Yeah.
And then the moment you get off the plane, it's Mardi Gras.
It's free.
It's a free for all. We've got 1,000 people here in this party and there's this club and there's no, you know. And so what is this? I'll come to that, but let's finish on the kid point. I think it was stupid to mask them. I think at the minimum you do a randomized trial so you can sort it out. But what's going on in New York City?
Yeah.
Oh my God, this crazy mayor.
They want to put masks on only toddlers.
Only toddlers. Which— to me.
Oh, because they can't be vaccinated. And we talked about this.
But if you're an unvaccinated 6-year-old, you don't have to wear it.
Right.
So it's not based on vaccine status.
Yes.
And 2 to 4 have even lower risk than any other age group and even lower risk than some vaccinated adults who are free to go to like, you know, bars. And this mayor's got the only toddler mask policy. He keeps saying it's justified by science, but it must be justified by – literally, he must have the dumbest advisors to tell him that this is a good idea. Because one, there's the science of it, which is bankrupt. But then there's the politics of it, which I would think would be so bankrupt, you're going to look like such an idiot. Do you think if somebody came to you at the beginning of the pandemic, like, listen here. Look at this. This is the age gradient of risk. I show you right here. It's maybe a thousandfold difference in risk. Older people not doing so good. Who do you want to mask up in this? And you're going to say, that two-year-old I got.
Round up that toddler and slap a cloth mask
on this kid. Except when they're napping. Then they take it off.
That works well. A bunch of heavily breathing children in an enclosed room for like an hour.
Yeah, right. Okay. So it's a stupid problem. But meanwhile, that Eric Adams went to that gridiron dinner, 700 people, you know, and it was a super spreader event, and he got COVID.
Yep.
And I was like, this guy. I thought he was a savvy politician.
Yeah. Well, who knows? Maybe he is. Maybe New Yorkers want that.
I know, but doesn't he have some grander ambition than just, I thought it's always a stepping stone for these people.
Oh, it is. Yeah. Well, I don't know, dude. All I know is that's just dumb. That's where science and policy don't even intersect. I don't get it.
Can you imagine debating this person in a political thing like 5 years from now when it's really cool down? I'd be like, he's like, you ran the state, your deficits were a little bit higher and blah, blah, blah. I was like, dude, you masked 2 year olds while you went to a party.
Yeah, and got COVID.
I was like, you want the guy who he masked the two by force of law? He didn't even say like you could if you want. He forced him by law. And then he like fired this lawyer who wanted to protest. And then he kept saying science, but obviously we all know now that was stupid. You know, you're done.
We are in a world where Senator Dianne Feinstein still is a senator despite having, cognitive difficulty. Yeah. So, I mean, again, we're in a world that doesn't fully make sense.
I see what you're saying. These politicians have such an incumbency that they can
– there's a momentum.
Well, you know what? If these people pull off this stunt, I will – a little bet. I will buy you a beer.
Ooh.
Here's my claim. Any politician who is in a photograph that was widely disseminated where they are unmasked and the kiddos are all masked, the Stacey Abrams photos, you know, these kind of photos that Kathy from New York State, the governor, or any politician that had a totally stupid mandate like this, the toddler mask mandate, I think in 5 to 10 years, they have nearly no chance. I'll say this. In the absence of an absolutely crazy candidate on the other side, they will lose. You think they'll triumph?
I hope so. There should be karma for that.
Oh, you hope that they lose?
No, I hope they lose. Yeah. I mean, it's insane. Do you see how Trump endorsed our boy, Dr. Oz?
Yeah, I see that he's gone. He's gone for Oz.
middle-aged housewives really trust this guy. Like that was like
I thought he said something like he'd been on TV for 10 years and he had the top ratings.
Yeah. I mean, it was how's he doing? I heard he was not doing so well.
I haven't kept up on that. Yeah. I thought he would do well because I thought name recognition would be a lot.
Yeah, but I think people Pennsylvanians see through the charlatan in that.
Maybe the thing that irritates them most is that he's like a New Jersey carpetbagger.
You know? I'm a New Jersey carpetbagger. I mean, I was born in Morristown, New Jersey.
I see. But then you have Central Valley cred.
That's right. So you can carpetbag from a shithole to a shithole.
That's an equal exchange.
It's an equal, yeah. It's an equal exchange. Okay, yeah.
So, okay, we talked about, the airplane travel mask. You want to go into that?
I think
it's stupid.
They were going to get rid of travel mask requirements on public transport, but then they decided not to.
Yeah. And then somebody was like, somebody put this well. They were like, this is to protect ACT people. And then there's an equity issue here. Like the people who have to use public transport have no choice. And then they're like, it's actually the other way around, that rich people get to go in a way that they don't have to wear the mask all the time. And poor people have to travel on like buses and trains and planes.
That's right.
I mean, the simple point is that like, what is their logic? You have a situation right now where you're getting like pre-Omicron, seroprevalence was 140 million Americans.
Yeah.
Plus like 200 million Americans have been vaccinated, 250 million Americans have been vaccinated. So you combine like vaccinated plus people who have had COVID, plus people who are vaccinated and had COVID. And then you look at what's going on, and it's like Mardi Gras all over the place. It's just like parties all the time. And then you think to yourself, I want a slow spread by putting a mask mandate only in one tiny place with a mask that doesn't work.
Yep.
While what is the goal? And everyone, they're going to get it eventually. They're all going to get the break.
All going to get it. And in fact, what do you think is really the case rate right now for this BA2 variant? Because nobody's reporting their home antigen test. Nobody's even testing.
It's much higher than what it is.
It's way higher. And yet our hospitalizations are flat, declining, deaths are declining. So the actual outcome that we want is there.
You know, and I want to go back to that, like, because I think that this is something that people have said. And I guess, like, it's the idea of flatten the curve, which is, like, we should implement these things so we prevent the hospitals from being overcrowded, et cetera.
Right.
I guess I want to say, like, when you're three of the pandemic, like, one, you need to build a hospital that you can kind of handle a little excess in a time.
Yeah, exactly.
You might get that surges. You might get that in the winter. Two, how much can you suppress normal life because you're worried about hospital capacity.
Right.
And then three, the reality is, like, most of the places that were, like, totally shut down in 2020, it wasn't about hospital capacity. Like, their hospitals were mostly empty. That's why we had a bailout for hospitals, because there wasn't a surge everywhere. There's just a few cities that were really hit.
Yeah. I would even say this. You want to help hospital capacity?
Yeah.
Try to help unload the mental health crisis in the ER by opening up. Because the pandemic made all of that worse by creating social isolation, anxiety, and all
of that. And firing all these doctors and nurses for vaccine mandates.
Right.
And
they didn't get a booster. They get fired. Right?
What about that?
I mean, you had to hold your nose and get a booster.
I did.
Right.
I had to do it.
By the way, so Paul Offit just wrote.
I saw that New England Journal commentary.
New England Journal thing.
It's good.
It's really good. He basically.
Think if I had printed that off and sent it to them, I could have gotten out of my booster?
Yeah. Look, Paul Offit says.
I'm sure that
we'd love to see compelling data for severe disease prevention in young, healthy people that you're compelling a booster for.
Yep. I think this goes to show you the age-old truth, which is you can't let stupid people make mandates. No, you can't let – I mean, mandates are – you need to be very cautious. And booster mandates for 20-year-olds is a mistake.
It's a mistake.
It's a mistake made all over the place.
Just wasting your juice. You're wasting your public health juice, and you're creating mistrust.
You're creating mistrust.
Yeah, that's all it is. So guess what's coming up, though? 5 to 11-year-olds, FDA's weighing in on a booster for them.
Based on antibody data?
Yeah.
And I thought the first two—
Based on a tiny study with antibody data.
And the first two is not even working so good for them. Their breakthroughs are going through the roof. Yeah. The first two had, like, vaccine effectiveness in a New York State study of, like, 11% or something like that.
I think Offit was right in the article to say, you know, why are we even calling these breakthroughs? This is what this vaccine is designed to do, is prevent severe disease. Yeah.
Yeah. I'll push back on Offit a little bit. Okay. Well, one, I agree with him. I think he's right. That's what it was. That's what it ought to have been designed to do.
Right.
But if its goal was always severe disease, they should have made the primary endpoint of the original randomized control trial severe disease.
Severe disease, but they made it infections.
They made it symptomatic infections.
Yeah, symptomatic infections.
So it wasn't asymptomatic infection.
That's right.
And also, they purposely – I don't say purposely. Let me take that back. I take back the word purposely. They happened to not do asymptomatic swabbing on everyone at
random.
That's
right. I remember that.
Because that would have provided a lot of information about transmission.
That's right. So we couldn't say in those early days, oh, does this vaccine actually implement transmission declines?
We had, like, a subset analysis from Moderna that
found
very low swab positivity, but we didn't have, like, the gold standard.
Right.
But that
was with Wuhan strain.
Yeah, Wuhan strain.
Right.
And by the way, this is the same old mRNA, huh? They never want to change that.
So, okay, that brings me up to another thing that Paul mentioned in his piece, which is original antigenic sin.
Mm-hmm.
And what that is, for people who don't know. Yeah. Now, by the way, this has been co-opted by the sort of fringe anti-vaccine community.
Right.
So let's just put that out there that, listen, it's not what they say.
But just because some crazy person said it doesn't mean it's not true.
That's right.
Yeah, I mean, there's a kernel of truth in it.
Because there's going to be crazy people who are like, the asteroid's coming. But then there may actually be an asteroid coming,
right?
The original antigenic sin is where the immune system kind of imprints on the first version of the viral antigen that it sees. And so we've given it that in the form of either natural infection with Wuhan strain or with the vaccine. Now, when you keep showing it the same strain, it's going to imprint. So, and they actually did some data on this. They updated the strain to be an Omicron antigen.
Yeah.
And when they tested it versus the original thing, they both developed the same number of antibodies. And it might be because system is already imprinted on the original and you're not going to do better now.
Yeah. And I think I listened to Paul say this on your podcast, which was, you know, they learned with HPV, they originally had the quadrivalent and they went to the nonavalent from like 4 to 9.
That's right.
And if a girl had never gotten the 9 and got the 9, she's got antibodies to all 9.
Right.
But if the girl had gotten the 4 quadrivalent, HPV antigen, and then the 9, she would make very robust again to the 4 and not as good for the
not
other 5.
Not as good to the 9. That's
the other five, right.
Antigenic sin or imprinting. And so the question then becomes, why do we keep flogging? Well, it actually becomes a couple questions.
Yes.
One is, would an updated vaccine then be helpful for people who've already had the original?
Correct, with a different structure.
With a different structure, because it may not be, because original antigenic, you know, you might as well just use the same one. And the second question is, why even use the same one if it's not going to do anything for severe disease? So,
there's two questions, right? What is the goal? And then two, like, what is the immunological response?
Right.
And then the other point to make is that, like, I mean, like, the spike protein is slightly different with Omicron.
Right.
And what happens if you give an Omicron only mRNA, it's possible you have a rev up of the antibodies that hit the epitopes that are preserved between the two.
That's right.
But not sort of all the novel epitopes.
That's right. The new stuff. Yeah.
The new stuff. And these are all good questions.
They're good questions.
You know, let me tell you something. You ever get to that point where you're like, you know, I don't want to go grocery shopping. I just got to use up whatever's in my freezer.
Oh, yes.
And I think Pfizer's at that point. Like, we got to use up all this, man.
Oh,
we got all this.
Man.
Give them four, maybe 5 doses. I don't know. But we got to use up this.
You may be onto something there.
I don't know why they're doing this stupid.
So how bad does Pfizer feel that they thought, you know, Paxlovid's going to be this big blockbuster and no one wants to use it, though?
I think, people want to use it.
People want to use it, but it's actually not being used that much.
Oh, yeah. Well, I say, but I think that they've already sold it and they got the cash. Didn't they sell it to the federal government?
I
heard that, like—
I know the federal government bought a ton of it. Yeah.
But I saw this graph of, like, Pfizer's earnings this year. They're going to top out $100 billion.
Oh, my God.
You know, I just make out my tax check straight to Albert Bourla.
Might as well.
Dear
Al. Just write it right, Dear Al. Yeah.
And then in the notes it says, I say, thanks for dose number 8.
Yeah, that's in the nose, right? Yeah. Dose 8. You're hoping you can write it off your HSA, which you have because you don't have universal coverage for healthcare.
And then I have to put my trope, 1.0.
Oh, yeah. My troponin just bumped ever so slightly. I might be reaching the asymptote of that last booster that I need. Am I fully vaccinated? Well, what's your troponin?
Fully vaccinated is always however many you've had plus one.
Plus one. No, you're good. It's an asymptote that you never reach.
So we did the Eric Adams. We did the travel mask. We talked about something like that. Ashish Jha on TV.
Yes. So I just read an article where they were talking about Ashish, and they were saying he's received very warmly by the administration because he's so congenial and such a good communicator and so on. And he's now telling people, he's very optimistic, and he's saying, listen, guys, what we care about are hospitalizations and it's not about cases. So let's not panic about cases. So that's the last I understood about Ashish.
Well, I'll say a few things that I think won't get me in trouble.
Then don't say them. I say stuff that's going to get me in trouble. It's the VPZD show.
Well, I guess the first thing I would say is that, like, you know, some people were like, it said, like, TV pundit becomes what at White House counsel.
Right, right.
And they're like, oh, that's unfair. He's the dean of a public health school.
Right.
So I want to say, like, he has, like, real credentials.
Yeah.
He has published many, many papers.
Yep.
In top journals.
Yep.
He was a professor at Harvard. He ran the global health sort of group. And then he became the dean of the Brown School of Public Health. And that was all before the pandemic.
That's right. And also a nice guy.
And by all accounts, I don't know. I've never met him.
Yeah, I know a lot of people who know him very well. We're connected on LinkedIn, but I haven't met him.
You connect on LinkedIn?
Yeah, well, you know, back when I did LinkedIn, now LinkedIn just sits there and I have all these messages from people. Do you even check your LinkedIn? I'm like, why would I? I'm not a douchebag.
I always get people who, like, it's like they want to connect with you on LinkedIn. I was like, dude, I don't even know how to log into LinkedIn. Get the email.
LinkedIn is like, you know how each social media has, and again, we won't get too distracted. Yeah. Each social media has its own flavor. Like TikTok is like dancey stupidity. Twitter is whatever it is. Yeah, and Facebook is like, you know, middle-aged women and me. but LinkedIn is something special. It is pure business drivelly.
Business speak.
I hate it. And I tried to do it for a while when I was a business, when I was ZDUG MD LLC and I was having sponsors and all this. And then I was like, you know, the minute I stopped doing that, I felt so much happier.
Yeah.
It's just not me. But anyways.
So
Ashish.
Ashish. Okay. So he's got like the credentials, like to be a dean of public health. And I think he got the job at Brown before COVID even came. Like, I think he had already like agreed he would take the job. If I recall correctly, somebody can correct me if I'm wrong, but like, I don't think it was COVID that helped him become the dean. I think he was.
No, I don't think so. Okay. Yeah, I don't think so.
Then though, I think we have to separate. If he had never opened the Twitter app, he would still be the dean of the Brown School of Public Health and he wouldn't be the COVID czar.
Right.
So I think that's a separate thing people don't follow. Like, yes, he has qualifications, but he wouldn't be the COVID czar if he didn't tweet a lot.
Right.
And he tweeted a lot, and he tweets in a certain way. You know, he has puts a lot of spaces in the...
Oh, I haven't seen his tweet.
Oh, he's got like a character. His tweet is like, it's always this long because he puts lots of space. He's
space in there.
He's a space bar, man. Enter man. He's an enter man.
He's a specimen. He's a specimen. A spaceman.
So he has his own tweets, and he has his threads about everything. You know, okay. And then from the threads, he got, and of course, he's got the title. Then he got invited to all these shows, and he goes on the shows, and he does his circuit, and he's on the shows like all the time. And I read an article saying that he was like literally like on the shows for like tons of like, you know, quarter of the day is him like doing the shows, all the shows, CNN, MSNBC, all the shows that like real people don't watch, but like elites watch, you know, or you're forced to watch in an airport lobby.
Or 70-year-olds watch.
Yeah.
Like Marty was saying when they watch him on Fox, it's
you're
like,
right.
Yeah.
He's like a rager in like West Palm Beach or something.
Yeah. He gets recognized in West Palm Beach all the time. Right.
Like
exactly.
Palm Beach or something. Yeah. Some retirement community. He's like, Marty. You know, here it's like, okay. So, all right. So Twitter got him on TV. And TV got him in the eye of Biden. And then the other thing that I find is a little problematic is that he's one of many doctors who received, quote, updates and announcements from the administration that were private of like what might be coming down the pike. And then in one instance, he wrote an op-ed like minutes after there was a policy change that was very supportive.
It was all ready to go. Yeah.
But I think there's already something problematic happening, which is that he was on Twitter. He likely had a lot of stuff in praise of the administration, some stuff critical of the administration. It seems like the administration reached out to him privately. They have private meetings. He can start getting private updates. And the moment you do that, you're starting to be captured because it's like, you want to please me because I'm the presidency. This is the office of the White House. And I'm telling you some of what you're saying is we like.
Right.
And some of what you say we don't like, that's fine. You know, you do you. But just remember some of what you're saying we like. So what do you want to say next, you know? I mean, I don't have to pressure you.
Yeah.
You will start to say what I like because you know I'm going to be in touch with you. You like those updates and announcements? It helps you, doesn't it? So what are you going to say now? What are you going to say about my policies? So I think naturally his policies were more and more praiseworthy of the administration. Why do I think that's a problem? When people turn on the TV, they need to know that the person on that TV is not in cahoots with the person making the calls. I want the TV person who's a critical of it at least to be totally independent. I don't want it somebody who's like auditioning for Trump or Biden.
Right, which of course is not how it works. They are all doing that.
Yeah, they're all playing
this
bullshit game.
They're all playing
this
game.
Well, this is the bullshit game. Okay.
It is. No, but that's actually, this is a point, and you actually made that same point. I don't know what you have against Indian physicians working in the administration, but I mean, Vivek Murthy, you were saying.
Like, I'm an equal opportunity critic.
You are.
Yeah.
No one will ever accuse you of racial nepotism.
No, I'm equal.
No.
Equal opportunity.
In fact, I mean, let's see. Who we talk about today? We talked about Ashish. I just said Vivek. Liana Wen, who is a woman of color. So we're just basically racist. We're just attacking
the
people
president,
of color.
President Trump.
He's pretty white.
Yeah, he's white. No, so we attack white people too.
Okay, good.
Okay,
good.
Okay,
so
yeah,
we're equal opportunity.
That's right, equal opportunity.
All right,
good.
All right, good. I was getting nervous.
No, I don't see race when I see problems. I see the specific problem. The problem is it doesn't matter, you know, who this person is. The problem is that
there's a problem here.
That it'll lead to the auditioning.
Yeah.
It will lead to the auditioning.
Well, so let me ask a question, then I'll play devil's advocate. Do you think doctors who care about stuff and you would fall in this, shouldn't do their thing on Twitter?
No, you should, but you can't let yourself be captured.
Mm.
And you have to be careful you're not auditioning for somebody. I mean, I don't know. I don't know who I would be auditioning for.
Right.
Because I don't have
Well, for you, you'd be basically auditioning for anti-vaxxers because we know who you are. You're a hater. I mean,
I think that's different. I mean, well, not that I say it's different in this respect. Well, first of all, I'm not auditioning for anti-vaxxers.
let's just put that out there.
As pro-vax as they come. But I'm a smart person who understands numbers. So that's why I think about safety and risk and uncertainty. And that's what some of these anti-vaxxers, these zealots, don't understand because they've lost their minds and they're not really sort of scientists. But like auditioning for an audience, like they might say, like, you're auditioning for the Z-Pack.
Right.
And it's like, well, the Z-Pack is – who is the Z-Pack? It's like thousands of people that randomly like you for, I don't know, your views on meditation or views on vaccine or your views on this or your views on that or for just the way you talk and the way you present yourself. They like you for whatever reason. You don't even know.
It's the shape of my head.
I'll tell you what it isn't. It's not those early videos. No, not those early videos.
Oh, you know how to hurt me. That's it.
No,
my daughter grabbed my head, my 10-year-old, this morning, and she said, your head looks like to me like a potato. And I was like, that's pretty accurate. Anyways, you're right. So the Z-Pack, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, capture. You know, I don't know. Is it capture? I mean, it would be capture if you were like really, I don't know, maybe if you were known for some perspective or issue, and if you feel like compelled to talk about that issue to grow your brand or audience,
right?
As maybe some people are.
Yeah.
But I don't think you fit that bill. But also, I think it's different than people who are trying to please a specific political party or political person.
Right.
Because if you're on TV, you want to please the White House because they'll give you a job.
Right.
ZPAC not going to give you no job.
No way. I mean, they support our show to a degree. Uh-huh, so I could be captured by them.
But it's like supported by like the way Bernie is supported by $5
payments.
That's
right. That they're $5 payments. Right.
It's not like one person giving you $100 million.
That's right. I mean, actually, this is worth really diving in.
Yeah, no.
Because this idea of capture is actually a huge problem, social media and beyond. So what you're talking about, and we're not saying, no one's saying Ashish is captured or anything like that. You're just saying that.
I was hinting it. No, I don't think he's captured, but I do think he was in a bad cycle.
That's right.
Right.
That's right. And it certainly can give the appearance of that.
Yeah.
And the truth about capture is, and this is something that no one talks about, except for my friend David Fuller on his podcast, Rebel Wisdom. The truth about capture is, you don't know you're captured.
You don't know you're captured.
It's an unconscious bias in many ways. Some people make it conscious. Like, I've talked to some people who are on Twitter and stuff, and they say, oh, no, I say these things because, you know, I'm really angling for a job in the White House or something like that. You know, I've heard people say this. But that's overt. They are aware of it. They know exactly what they're doing. Oh, the only people they're misleading is the public.
Yeah.
But they're not misleading themselves. The people I worry about more are the people who also mislead themselves. Like, if you look at, yeah, and I'm going to name, I'll name a name. So somebody like a very smart guy like Brett Weinstein, right? Like, he has grown a brand during COVID. He's done all this stuff during COVID by saying certain very contrarian things about vaccines. And his audience absolutely loves that. Mm. Now, whether you know it or not, that capture of validation and views and money, because there's Patreon, there's all the other stuff, it can capture you.
Now let's think about so there's like three tiers of capture, or three tiers we're talking about. One tier is a speaker or actor is speaking or acting in a way for a very small but powerful audience.
Ah.
Okay, so that's what I'm saying that Ja might be falling into, or right. At least we should be cognizant that what our media Twitter ecosystem is doing is creating such a potential.
Right.
Like, there'll be a future person who will be working for whatever future president we have, a Republican president, and they'll be going on TV saying things that they hope they like. And
right.
In fact, a lot of people, they accuse that, like, that's how Trump found them. They're like, watch, I'm on TV. Right.
And Dr. Oz has been accused of that.
Right.
He's shifted a lot on his things that he said.
And based now that he got the endorsement.
Now he got an endorsement. Yeah.
He got the big,
yep.
The letterhead.
The big T.
And there's doctors who will like take money from Celgene and then say good things about Celgene products and take money from Celgene. These are like very small entities with a strong like interest.
Yeah.
And they can capture this person with like a lot of money.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's one type of capture. That's a capture I'm like really most worried about.
Yeah.
The next capture is the capture you're talking about, like this Brett Weinstein, this capture where somebody's views may be pulled by not just like not by one rope, but by lots of rope, but like thousands of people who happen to hold a group, like a kind of view.
Right.
And I guess the question I have would be like, one, you should always ask yourself, like, are you taking that stand because you feel like the audience is pulling you there?
Right.
Two, if you took the stand that you really want to, might there be a different audience? Like, you know, we always, you know, you don't have to keep saying the same shit you said yesterday to have an audience. You might find there'll be different people who are drawn to you.
Yeah.
And then the third thing that is what I'm talking about, which is where I think, you know, you and I fall, is that we do talk about a range of different things.
Right.
You know, like my show has got all that boring bullshit that you don't listen to.
Yeah. And the boring bullshit I say is like, hey, let's all meditate ourselves into oblivion. Yeah.
And you have a range of different topics.
Right.
And it's shifted over your 10 years
That's
too.
Right.
Because sure you weren't into meditation that much back
no,
then.
No.
The audience has gone with you.
Right.
Because in part what you are—
At least some of them.
Right. And there's different people.
Yeah.
And so I think that's very different. And it's the same thing with like political donations. Wouldn't it be more problematic if it turns out that like, I don't know, Bill Clinton was entirely supported by big agriculture and he signed an agriculture bill.
Right.
Versus Bernie is supported by, you know, 1.5 million people who hold certain views. Some of which you agree with, some of which you don't agree with.
Well, it's like Cory Booker when they were talking about importing drugs from, re-importing from Canada or whatever.
And he took all that pharma money.
He took all that pharma money because he's in New Jersey, which is the big pharma central.
Pharma capital.
And, you know, everybody was like, what?
Yeah.
But that's direct capture.
That's capture.
Whereas we're talking about subtle levels of capture. Yeah, I mean, you know, and you know, people, I think that this is something that requires introspection too to even mm-hmm. think that it's possible for you if it's unconscious. Sam Harris is a good example of someone who does not get easily captured.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, so, right. Because so, he keeps changing up his topics.
He changes topics, but he's also quite consistent. His audience, because he's a bit of an intellectual dark web guy, so he is a contrarian on a lot of stuff. When his audience then starts to enrich in these folks, like what he found, like this was a good example. He found that a bunch of real strong Trump supporters were starting to be in his audience because he was saying things like very negative about Hillary Clinton. You know, he really doesn't like the Clintons and he's quite authentic about it. But then like his audience started being filling with like these pro-Trump people.
Then he
basically said, listen, you guys are idiots. Like if you think this guy's a good president, and he just chokes that aspect of the audience and just tries to guide it to wherever he thinks it ought to be. So now that requires a degree of—
Let's flip the whole coin because we're talking about people who are in sort of the public space.
Right.
But this is true even of people who are in totally the private space.
Oh,
like
yeah,
I know
yeah, yeah.
like a doctor who's a researcher— they know if they say certain things or have certain views on certain issues, they're going to get more grant funding. That's the hot topic. Those are the hot topics.
And then maybe
that might be one.
Right.
And I think there's a lot of important things to do there, but I also think there are ways in which it can be cliched and repetitive and like
not very
productive.
Sure. Yeah.
But even like stupid things like, I don't know, intracellular kinase, some bullshit that we don't even, you know, they have like a strong point of view about it or genomics. That was a hot topic. Mm. And so they can become trapped in that. And then they very quickly can come to say things that they're like, oh, yeah, I don't really think this is that promising, but that's where the grant money is. And it's a type of authenticity. They're not an authentic scientist. They're authentic, you know?
So capture in academics and in research. Absolutely.
By what the journal likes. They're like, oh, the journal's like this. I better go into that space.
Totally.
Where the grant money is, certain tumor types or certain even pathways or certain ideas. When Varmus was famously in charge of the NIH, he discovered RAS, some oncogene, and he really wanted to drug RAS. And there was like a disproportionate funding to drug RAS than there was other targets, of course.
I remember RAS.
RAS.
Yeah, those tumor suppressor genes. Is that what RAS is?
RAS is an oncogene.
Oncogene, that's right.
But there are
also
tumor suppressors.
Yes, that's right. It's an oncogene. P53 is a tumor suppressor.
Correct.
See, I remember nothing from college.
Now you're 50% the way there.
You think I can get a grant?
Those are very important.
Oh, yeah, good.
Well, here's how you'd get a grant. You'd say, like, our novel and innovative and put all this.
That's right.
You got to put that LinkedIn word vocabulary in there.
That's right.
Get that LinkedIn vocabulary.
That's right. Actually, what I studied in college for my honors thesis in genetics was integrin-mediated cell-cell adhesion pathways, which were important in cancer.
Tight.
It was felt to be, yes. And so what we did was we mutated Drosophila fruit flies so that they developed blisters in their wings, which I would screen for. And then we'd run the gels on them to see if there were any integrin associated pathway mutations.
Hence your college nickname, Lord of the Flies.
That's right. I've got the conch, Piggy. I'm the one who speaks.
Where are my glasses?
Where are my glasses, Piggy?
Where are my glasses?
Oh, I've got the conch. Gosh.
If you were a kid growing up today, you wouldn't get that reference because you'd never read a book.
You know, it's true.
You look at your phone.
My daughter read Lord of the Flies twice, actually, because she just thought it was so powerful.
It's a powerful book.
Yeah, she's a dark child.
I don't want to read 1984 again because I'm afraid I'll see it in the mirror.
It is bad news.
Wait, back to the cheese job. Okay, so close this out. Close out the authentic. So I guess the lesson is the first thing is like you got to be authentic.
Yeah.
Two, you have to avoid like real capture.
Right.
I think Ashish was in this problematic thing. I don't know how he's going to do, but so far, extending airplane mask mandate, I vetoed that decision.
Yeah.
He was on Fox News yesterday. They asked point blank, Dr. Jha, what do you think about masking young children? And he said, oh, I trust the AAP and CDC. Because they're the experts here.
Oh, dear.
I said, strike two.
Yeah.
It's not good because the WHO disagrees. And the data is crappy.
Yeah.
And I think he is smart enough to know how crappy the data is.
Yeah.
So then it smells to me too political. We'll see how he does.
Yeah.
But I'll be on him. If he does good, you know what? If he says the things I like to hear, and that by like to hear, I mean like scientifically based
and
factual.
I was going
to
say, yeah.
Because that's what I like.
Yeah.
Not like my point of view, which happens to be that. But if he says what I like, because it's factual and accurate. Then he'll earn my blessing.
I like the word you said, which is authenticity. That's what I like to see. I like to see authenticity. You can feel it in people. It's funny. I think that's part of the reason Trump, for all his pluses and minuses, he was Trump.
Yeah.
You knew what you were getting there.
Sometimes when he like says something that's like, it's just what he was thinking.
Yeah. And you're like, you know, Americans actually do respond to authenticity.
Especially when the opposite candidate is like feels very inauthentic.
Feels inauthentic. I remember when I was watching the debate in Trump and Biden, and I was watching them both, and Biden looked like a mask of a politician, you know, kind of reciting the stuff, and Trump was just there just being an asshole. And I'm like, that's authentically who he is. He's an asshole. Whereas Biden's being this character, right? And
I honestly think that, like, I think Biden is worried that, like, when in his youth he was more himself and he said things and then he, like, the quote-unquote gaffes.
Yeah.
And so he doesn't want to be there again.
Yeah.
But I actually think that if he was really more himself, people might even like him better.
Like him more, yeah. Like him more. I think you're right. There is an authenticity thing. And you know, that word authenticity can become cliche too.
Correct.
But the truth is, you know, one of the things that, you know, my friend Angelo DeLullo says, the physician who we do some meditation videos and stuff, awakening videos, he says something that happens as you go down the path is that you become more and more authentic, actually. You become who you are without filters more. And it doesn't mean you go hurting people by insulting them and saying exactly what you think and so on. It's just you're more true to what you are without all the obfuscation. And I think there's something there.
But I wonder if you think this, like, you know, that being able to be authentic in America in 2022 is a luxury that very few people get.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Because, like, let's say you work in some regular job. You're not be able to have a podcast where you actually say what you think about anything. But remember that woman from Levi's? They fired her. She was – did you see this article?
No, I didn't.
She was, like, in line to be the next president of the Levi's Corporation. Mm. And then she tweeted – it was originally covered in Barry Stack's Substack. Mm. And then it moved over to the New York Times.
Barry Weiss, yeah.
Barry Weiss's Substack. And she – worked for Levi's, and she started tweeting that school closures was a bad idea.
Mm.
And Levi's gradually put the squeeze on her, and then fired her.
Wow.
And then she made an excellent point, which was that her colleagues were also tweeting on political issues, including George Floyd and things like that, but it was for the other side, presumably.
Right. They had no problem.
And they had no problem with that.
Yeah.
And then also, I think school closure really, the sides got flipped. It was the progressives who forgot what their goals were and their philosophy is. Okay, so that's another issue.
Right, right.
And I think she identifies as a progressive too. And but she was fired. And I think, like, so many people, you know, because I'm always like, I always criticize social media. I'm like, look at all these anonymous accounts.
Like an egg.
Anonymous accounts. And then somebody was like, well, you know, you have to be anonymous. You work in my job. If anyone saw any of these posts, like, you know, so I do feel bad.
Oh, this is a good point. Now, this is talking about expressing your opinions on things and your views in a public space. But like, even like the person working in that job, what if they are authentically them in the job? Meaning, okay, this is my aptitude and I am me in my most honest expression in this space. That's probably 90% of the battle. That other 10% of, like, well, there are other beliefs and so on. So it is interesting. Because in medicine, I think many of us are inauthentic.
Of course.
I mean, it's just conditioned into us. Don't be who you are. Be who you think the patients want, or who the administrators want, or who your boss wants.
Who the graders want. I mean, most of it, like the first 10 years are grading.
Right. It's all attendings. You're just kissing the ring, right? And then the goal is, like, one day you'll be the ring that's kissed. So it's okay. Just kind of suck it up. And then you can inflict it on others.
Yeah. But then what happened was the culture changed. And
now you can't even do that.
No. Now that, like, people come up and they're all question you so hard. Like, hey, listen, easy.
That's true. It has shifted. It's like the attendings are targets. It's
our generation, we paid up and then we paid down.
Yeah. It's really true. I think that's why, you know, that we could probably get some understandable criticism for being a little hard in that way, because we did have to pay up.
We did.
Yeah. We had to kiss the ring. Now it's less the case.
I had to listen to people say, like, things were, like, just factually an error. And I was like, oh, you know, after doing that, like, I was like, you know, maybe you think about it. Like, as polite as I possibly could, they're like, no. And I was like, all right.
I'll suck it up. Now that kid would, like, they'd have a blog about how their attending's a dipshit, and, you know, and they'd get social credit for doing that. Oh, you knocked down. No, you're speaking truth to power.
You know, I do think that they're in for a rude awakening, because everybody will eventually get older and then they'll be knocked down by the newer. And I think we've already seen in some organizations that live on tearing down.
Yeah.
They just get tore down themselves.
Yeah. It's you know, even the Facebooks and stuff, like, their employees run the show in some way, you know?
They're all upset about Elon and Twitter and.
Right. It's like, dude.
Yeah. But back to, I guess, how does it connect to the Ashish? I mean, I guess I'd say that, you know, he shouldn't have said that thing about the masking kids. I don't know why he did. And,
well, what we'd like to see is just honesty. You know, it's funny if like whatever Leanna Wen just said, if our public officials would have been saying that.
I'd love to interview her because if you're listening, because she did really a 180 in my opinion on these policy issues. She was very in December of 2021. She said I think she wrote an op-ed. We may need to proactively shut down schools for Omicron.
I remember that.
And now she's the other way around.
Right. It'd be interesting to talk to her because I'd love to get also, and we're connected actually. We've met before and we're connected, but I don't know her well, but I'd say that I'd like to ask her about Planned Parenthood.
What happened there?
The thing is, again, like how much authenticity can a public figure actually show about these kind of things publicly?
That's always a thing. And especially if like there's ongoing legal,
I don't know. Yeah. Then you can't say anything. Yeah. So see this, and this is the thing, you and I have talked about this, this idea of authenticity when you're interviewing someone, like I've had people on the show that will not be themselves, will not be the person they are before the show starts. They put on a mask and I effing hate that. I hate it so much that it's almost stopped me from interviewing people to a degree. Like how many interviews do I do? There's a rotating cast of characters that I have.
You find who you like.
I find who's authentic. Like it's you. Like if J-Bot wanted to come back on, I know who J-Bot is.
Right.
You may disagree with what he's saying, but he is J-Bot.
And Old Man Marty.
Old Man Marty. Is this soup fresh? What's going on?
And so, where'd you get your juice?
And, where is
it, was, and the oranges come from?
Are they free range oranges?
Florida.
Marty, Monica, you, Jay. You know, these are people that I know are going to be
authentically. This is something that no one in the audience, unless you've actually done an interview show, will be sympathetic to. But it's really powerful how true it is that like you get at somebody who doesn't want to talk and it's so painful.
You can't get the time back for yourself. You can't get the brain cells back and you missed an opportunity you feel to really.
It's like a woodworker and you get the delivery for the wrong product. You can't even build a table. That's not the right wood.
Yeah. So why even bother? You know, cause I've had people tell me, Z, why don't you interview some more mainstream COVIDian voices and so on. And I go, because I know who they are. They are not going to tell you what they really think.
That's the other problem.
Yeah.
And then I also think that a lot of people are like, this is another cultural thing where it's like, I don't want to go on and be challenged about my views.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Well, then next.
Yeah. But they're like, I don't want any tough questions or
right.
I don't want to talk for more than 10 minutes.
And the truth is like, you know, I have all kinds of PR companies reaching out to me. We have a perfect guest for your show. They've written this New York Times selling book. And I look at it and I go look and I watch some of their videos. I'm like, this is the most inauthentic piece of shit I've ever seen. And some of them are in spiritual circles too, like big heads of like
things. Really?
Yeah. You know, and you're just like, no.
So then I guess the question I have is like, what do you think motivates them? Like, I mean, I understand somebody who like, you can tell they have a point of view. They want to get their point of view across,
right.
And and they are willing to be open about their point of view. That's why they're doing it. But what motivates somebody to want to be an influencer and then not want to be themselves?
I really think it's a narcissism. It's like a fake mask they put on to protect their own insecurity that they're not good enough. You know, I mean, and look, as somebody who continually suffers from general imposter syndrome,
you do.
I do, but. But, you know, and I've talked about this on the show, but I'd say that I do and I don't. I know who I am. Mm-hmm. So when I suffer imposter syndrome, it's a feeling that I'm not doing as good as I really should. Like, I know I can do better.
I don't think that's not imposter syndrome.
It's not true imposter syndrome. The true imposter, sometimes I get real imposter syndrome where I'm like, dude, I have no business. Like, I can't believe I'm asked to weigh in on this.
Well, you know, I want to push on this. I feel like a lot of people are talking to me about imposter syndrome.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Like some of them, I'm like, you know, you have imposter syndrome because I was like, you got some stuff to work on. I was like, because you don't know all
You're
the-
You're actually an imposter.
Well,
right?
I mean, like-
Oh,
I
that's
mean,
a good point.
I mean, I think people like, you know- I mean,
I think it's definitely the case.
Yeah. Like, I don't know how to tell you. It's like kindly, but like- When anyone starts any field or any craft, you're not the good at it.
Right.
You're not as good as you could be.
Right.
Because you haven't started it. From medical knowledge, you don't know a lot, to, I don't know, even the art of the gab, you know?
Yeah.
I think we do better than we did when the first time I came here.
Yeah. We should link to our first interview.
Oh, God. It'd be terrible.
Let's not.
You could link to it. I'm curious.
Yeah.
Whoever you talk to, one of them had a lot of hair.
Yeah, you look like Bigfoot. It was great. It was pandemic.
I got a haircut like
Actually, we did a Zoom interview even before that, didn't we, about oncology.
That was worse because
Well, we didn't even know each other, and we'd never met in person.
You should never have a Zoom talk with
them. Zoom is the worst.
I know. I've done. I mean, I do a lot of Zoom interviews, but it's
you have to
very technical.
Technical stuff, right?
Like on my, like we can have this, but well, you and I, of course, have a rapport now, so we can do a lot.
But
more,
anybody in a physical space, the rapport goes up exponentially. Course, it just goes up exponentially. Plus, you get to hang out a little before, a little after in person,
and the way the words fall on each, you know.
Absolutely. Like, you know, Offit is one of the only people I interview by Zoom now. And the reason I do it is we had an in-person back in the day and we developed that connection and rapport. If I didn't have that and it was only Zoom, I don't know that we'd have the same interaction.
Well, I have interviewed a bunch of people because like to talk about their publication or something, which is more kind of structured.
Right.
Wait, now what were we saying a second ago? That was, on this imposter syndrome.
Yeah.
So I guess the one thing I want to tell people is like who are suffering from imposter syndrome, like, yes, part of it could be like a misplaced feeling. Mm-hmm. But the other part is like you could be potentially there's room for you to improve. And so you'll feel more confidence.
Right.
I think that's true in medicine a lot because like a lot of people feel an imposter when they just don't know what to do next.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And, or they think they know, but they don't really feel that confidence that they know because they may not, you know. And I think that's part of like medical training. But then the other part is a misplaced.
Yeah. There is a valley in sort of the Dunning-Kruger curve where you know a little, you overestimate what you know. But then as you learn more, you reach that valley where imposter syndrome becomes real because you realize how much there is to know and how impossible it is to know it all. But then as your confidence improves, the imposter syndrome maybe – it's made, there's a component of it because you still know there's more to learn, but you actually, you're confident, but you overestimate what other people know. So this is something that's been looked at. It's like they tend to go, well, you know, we don't need to talk about that because everybody knows that. It's like, no,
I
don't.
I feel like I make that mistake sometimes in my videos and
I
stuff.
I do. Yeah.
Assume. But you know, one thing I think about is like, especially with these papers on like vaccine safety and stuff. And I interviewed this woman who like is like a specialist in it. And I was just like, I see these people on Twitter and they're like, you know, so critical of the stuff that I've said about myocarditis and others. And I just want to say, you're totally wrong. I was like, you're totally wrong. You should have imposter syndrome because you're in over your head. You don't know what you're talking about. You don't analyze data like this for a living. I think you have, you're turning science into this like popularity contest based on what like your political friends think. And I was like, you're doing such a disservice to science. I was like, shut up.
Yeah, dude.
Is that bad?
No. This is why that's authenticity. That's exactly how you feel about it because you do this for a living.
I know.
Yeah.
And I'm like.
Yeah. You know, it's like okay, I'll, what do I do for a living now? I do this, right? So here's when people tell me, you ought to do this on social media or, you know, you should do this or that. I'm like, you have no effing clue what you need to do on social media because you're trying to move these icons and play this game. That it's not a game. The game is be your authentic self, deliver something people really want, and the rest of it just clicks.
Well, like at every academic like medical conference, they always have a panel on like how to use social media.
Yeah, those are the best.
And they find people who like have no competence.
Just the worst. Or these social media consultants. Like,
and I was like, they can't even get their own account to do it.
I know. It's like PR companies. Like, what do you do exactly?
I don't even get it.
Are you kidding? Like you cold reach out to random podcast hosts and try to get your dipshit guest with a terrible book.
So sad.
On a show that's not even going to reach the audience that matters to them.
So sad.
Yeah, it's just, it's really depressing.
10 lessons for social media. And you're like, who is writing this?
4 reasons children are mentally ill. Oh, wait, I just did that.
Oh, yeah, no.
No, it's true. It's true. And I don't know. Again, it cuts to just get good at something that you know is authentically what you care about and then talk about it.
Yeah.
And be you.
And talk about be you. And then, and also, and don't have anxiety about things that are like so far outside of your ability
to
do.
The world?
You can't be anxious. I mean, I'm anxious about those like 4 to-do list items I have for today and the 4,000 I have for this week.
There's something to be said for proximal busyness.
Proximal, yeah.
You know, just get busy on something that you care about. Oh, that reminds me of the kids' mental health thing. The kids now are so overscheduled and overstructured. They're doing a bunch of activities. That was the other piece to get into college, that it's this arms race, mostly among affluent people. Like Bay Area is exactly like this. They're all hyper-scheduled. They have the soccer and they have violin and then they have a Spanish tutoring and they have this. And so the kids are like in this weird bubble where they're actually quite lonely and overworked and underslept, but they're not actually doing anything that's of value. It, like free play or going out and socializing with kids in the neighborhood until the streetlights come on, where they learn like real skills, like how to deal with a bully or how to properly bully others. Then I learned that early on.
Yeah.
Like, I don't care if I'm short. I'll bully the crap out of you. I'll find what's weak about you and I'll just I'll drill on it.
It was a gift honed with time.
It is.
All right. I got to run because, and I hate when people say that at the end of the show.
No, but it's true.
But I do have to run because this person wants to have a phone call.
I think we actually did a thing, though.
That's good.
Yeah, this was fun.
We hit all the things on my little list.
Yeah. Look at that little thing. See, ever since I got this little pad, the show has gotten structured.
It went up a notch.
It went up three notches. And my imposter syndrome just plummeted through the bottom. Now I'm full Dunning-Kruger.
We should talk more about this. Imposter syndrome. Anxiety.
Yeah, we'll do another show on this.
Do another show. These kids. Because I was also thinking like all these activities I see young people do.
Yeah, yeah.
I was like, you know, the moment you turn like 22, you're never going to do any of those things again.
None of it.
I love soccer, but I it's been 15 years since I even played a single, you know.
I played clarinet in middle school. Do you think I'm going to play a clarinet now?
You got to cut that out. You're going to admit to these? Clarinet?
Dude,
why do you play clarinet?
This one time in band camp? Dude, it was bad. I was a huge nerd, man. But anyway, I continue to be. Guys. You know what to do. This is the VPZD show. I'll put it out on the channel, you're going to put it out on Facebook. I'm going to put it out.
No, maybe you put it. Well, we'll see.
Yeah,
we'll both put it out.
Okay. And it's going to be on the podcast. Subscribe on your favorite platform. Leave a review. It helps us, you know, beat out Hidden Brain with what's his name?
Shankar.
And Jetty? Is that his name?
No Shankar Vedantam.
That's right.
Sagar and Jetty. I'm the biggest Sagar fan.
I love Sagar.
I love Breaking Points.
Breaking Points is
Hidden Brain, no comment.
Yeah, I don't know. I just don't listen to it. We love you. Ish, and we're out. Peace.